They're Terrified and Tipsy is brought to you by Slash and Cast.
Oh, calm down. You're too excited. We just started. We haven't gotten to the good stuff yet. Can you introduce yourself to all of our friends who, for whatever reason, don't know who you are?
Yeah, it's probably a very good chance that they have no idea who I am. I am Ricky Glore. I am a stand-up comedian, writer, and director, actor, producer, sometimes special effects if something needs to be held or done, boom mic, jib holder.
Jack of all trades, basically.
You wear many hats.
And I am the writer, co-director, executive producer, actor in the upcoming indie horror film, All Your Friends Are Dead.
That sounds interesting. Like,
and very morbid.
Like a one-man show, basically, right?
It's funny, like, doing stand-up definitely is a one-man show, and when people are like, oh, you know, you do comedy, and now you're doing horror, there seems to be a trend of that as of late. Do you, like, doing stand-up, blah, 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 and I'm like, well, you know what, stand-up actually isn't my favorite creative outlet. I love the ensemble. Like, I love doing sketch. I love making movies because everyone who's there kind of has an opinion, and it's not necessarily always valid, but I always like to open it up to, hey, everyone, we're doing this thing. We've written this thing. You have ideas. You feel a certain way. If you ever have an idea, there's a lot of downtime when you're making a movie. Pull me aside and pitch it to me, and I'll take it with a grain of salt. Maybe it won't connect in any way to me at that moment, but maybe I'll sit on it for a while and I'll be like, oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. Or maybe it will spark something else. So that's, I love the collaborative effort of anything that involves a crew or actors or whatever.
Feels like you'd be more limitless too when you're creating a movie or something like that, opposed to just doing some comedy in front of a group
exactly.
of people.
And I get, like, there's those auteurs that have that singular vision that it's like, I have to execute this, and you have to trust me because I mean, there are moments like that too, even when you're collaborating, where you're just like, you have to trust what I've done, and you have to trust where I'm going with this, or not. Like, you have to just trust me because I know I can see the movie, or I can see the move or the shot or whatever in this thing. But that's also what's fun about collaborating, is that trust. And I think that comes from my improv background.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm the best person of, like, I could never do stand-up comedy ever. Like, ever.
No. I think I'm the only person who finds myself funny anyway. So.
I have watched your watch along of the movie Altitude and was dying laughing. It wasn't even Mystery Science Theater 3000. It was do you remember that Kristen Wiig character? It was Aunt something, and she was on a Weekend Update, and she used to review movies, and she's like, and I give it to what? Like, that's what it was like watching the two of you. I was like, oh, you are gems. You are an amazing, like, comedic duo.
Yeah, we have our moments.
Thanks.
I don't know if I can stand in front of a crowd and entertain people.
Like, just each other, I think.
Between the two of us, we're idiots. So
you should take it on the road. You guys should get some movies or short films or whatever, or even commercials. I think you guys could probably gab about and, like, have an audience just watch you all react to those things. I'd pay money.
This one right here, she's out of her freaking mind. She scares the shit out of me because she jumps and, like,
very reactive in movies. Yeah.
I can't.
I'm really glad we invited you on our show to talk about us more. Yes. So, I mean,
you're like,
what else,
no,
what
you're
else
like,
do you want to know about us?
Please, please.
What else you got? Come on.
That's how great we are. Oh my gosh.
So do you feel like you got into comedy before horror, or at the same time, or one led into the other?
I think one kind of led into the other. I actually do not think they're that different from one another. I think they both elicit a visceral reaction and when they're done very well. And I think actually you will find varying levels of both in both genres. Like the best horror has levity and has some great comedy, because then it will turn on a dime and then just get horrific. And that's really cool for an audience to be laughing and then all of a sudden being like, oh no, 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 no. You caught me off guard. I was happy. I was good. But for me, it came to, I saw everything at way too young of an age. And as far as movies, sorry, not like in life, like I saw a man die in front of me at the age of two, and I was
a lot
like
of trauma.
Yeah. It's a lot of baggage.
Yeah. But like my dad, I remember seeing A Nightmare on Elm Street, the original, sitting at the foot of my parents' bed. I think they thought I was asleep when I was like 3 years old. And wow. I have like loose memories of seeing it for the first time. And so my dad, who is a big cinephile, and because I was ADHD and super rambunctious as a child and would not go to sleep at night, he would stay up with me, and selfishly, but also kind of as a rite of passage, started imparting on me the things that he grew up and loved. So we would watch comedies, old sitcoms he would watch growing up, and then old comedic movies like the Martin and Lewis movies, Bob Hope and Bing Crosby, Road Pictures, and then like Abbott Costello. And then Abbott Costello meets Frankenstein, which has Bela Lugosi, Glenn Strange, and has all the Universal monsters. Well, not all of them, but a lot of the Universal monsters in it.
Sure.
And what's interesting about that movie is Abbott Costello are very funny in it, but the monsters are just as horrific as they are in their Universal monster movies. That's cool. So when my dad saw that I was okay with that, he's like, and this is like when I'm four, he's like, okay.
Like grooming you into the, like the whole scary movie thing.
Exactly. Well, cause he wants, if he's going to have to stay up with me, he wants a buddy that can like, he wants a wingman that can keep up with him and his obsession of all things movie. And so then he's like, oh, you're cool with that. Let's watch the Universal monster movies. Mm-hmm. And so we watched all of them. I mean, and they run deep if you haven't. There's two waves of the Universal monster movies. One pre-World War II and then post-World War II. So they're very interesting to watch the changes in that. And then after we got through those, now I'm like 5-6 years old. You know, really
easing
old.
Easing into it,
I've lived a life. I'm smoking like unfiltered cigarettes and like
chain smoking, basically an alcoholic already.
Like, man, that Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi, they really get it. He then transitioned. He's like, okay, now let's dial it up a notch. Let's do the Hammer horror movies, which were the a lot of the Universal monsters like Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy, redone by this British film company called Hammer. So that's where you see Christopher Lee playing Dracula. That's where you see Peter Cushing playing Van Helsing and Dr. Frankenstein. David Prowse, who was Darth Vader, played Frankenstein in one or two movies. And those are have more gore, have more violence, and a lot more cleavage, like 100% more cleavage. Like
you mean like white shirts?
You need a good balance of
with
both.
The rain. Yeah.
I mean, it's all because it's they're set in like Victorian settings, so it's like corsets and bustiers. Yes. And so like that, I think was probably one of my first like sexual awakenings as a child, being like, oh, I'm interested in these a little bit more than I was those black and white movies where if they showed an ankle, it was scandalous. But so then now I'm like 6, 7 years old. And now my dad's like, well, you've seen those. Let's just keep the crazy train going.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. Here's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Here's Phantasm.
That's a huge leap.
Here's The Exorcist. Well, but like, and then like peppered in there is like Psycho.
Okay.
And like Peeping Tom, which was released the same year as Psycho. Mm-hmm. A bunch of 60s stuff. We're watching The Twilight Zone. We're watching the Outer Limits shows. Yeah. And so then by like the age 8, I had seen all the Nightmare on Elm Streets. By age 8, I was meeting Angus Grimm, who played the tall man in Phantasm, at a movie convention and being terrified.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's, but also in there, you have the same trajectory in comedy. So like mm-hmm. I was telling you, starting off with those old comedy movies, then it goes to the Marx Brothers and Three Stooges. Mm-hmm. And then it's going into Saturday Night Live of the 70s. And then it's me watching the SNL reruns from the 80s, where I fall in love with the cast from, probably my favorite cast is like 87 to 90, where it was Phil Hartman, Mike Myers, Kevin Nealon.
Sure.
And then not part of that cast, but I also fell in love with because it was the cast that my brother was watching was Will Ferrell and RIP mm-hmm. Norm MacDonald, who mm-hmm. I fell in love with. And yeah.
I mean, who hasn't? Who right. doesn't love him?
Well, I mean, just within this past week after him passing away, it was.
Well, you had kind of a relationship with him, right?
I did. I was super fortunate to have correspondences with him and meet him.
That's awesome.
And I every now and then would send a message over to Norm about something about comedy or the movie The Hustler with Paul Newman, which is about mm-hmm. pool, shooting pool. And he would reply back like, oh, here's some other movies that I love about poker or whatever. And we just shoot the shit.
That's a cool and, relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like, and he didn't, I don't know if you read the things, but like giving me a youngish comedian, mm-hmm. just like, life points, like being like, hey, really treasure these days when they're hard, when you're on the road and you're away from family. They'll be the best ones in your comedy life. They'll be the ones you treasure forever. Mm-hmm. And just no longer having that person to kind of like someone that you respect and think is a giant in the world of comedy.
Exactly.
And the sad part is too, is I don't think he ever, because he didn't have a huge ego, ever allowed himself to realize how influential he was on so many. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that just makes a great person. I mean, sure. That's just says who he is, you know, from the inside. Mm-hmm. So.
You always hope that like, if when they get announced that they died, that they really didn't die and they can live one more day just to see all the outpouring of love mm-hmm. that happens yeah. after everyone finds out. But yeah,
doesn't work mm-hmm. that way. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Sorry to bring it down.
Wow.
Well, now everyone's sad.
Wow. Way to go.
Well, I'll tell, last night I had a show in very southern Kentucky, and mm-hmm. I finished my set by telling a few of my favorite Norm MacDonald jokes.
Uh-huh.
And I knew it before I told him because I can do a Norm MacDonald impression. I didn't do him in his voice. I just read them. But I also then realized afterwards, these really kind of only work the best if it's him doing it.
Sure. It's all in his delivery. His delivery is what makes it, 100%.
I'll say one of my favorites, and it was an Ill Weekend Update. Well, two favorites. One was a very young Norm MacDonald when he was on like Star Search. He's like, has anyone ever given you a lottery ticket as a gift? He's like, what a crappy gift. It's like, hey, here's a lottery ticket as a gift. I hope you like nothing. He's like, I hope you enjoy throwing away that nothing later. Because not only did I get you something, I got you something that you now have to find a way to get rid of.
It's pretty good.
And the other one Weekend Update was a list of the best and worst places to visit this summer for vacation has been released. Number one, oddly on the list, Bangor, Maine. Number two, as the worst, Neverland Ranch. Of course, in the height of Michael Jackson controversy.
Of course.
I mean, I think we could all appreciate that one for sure.
My husband's obsessed with the moth joke that he told on Conan. Oh,
so good.
Any opportunity, it's so long too. I keep telling him not to tell Courtney. He'll be like, Courtney, have you heard the moth joke? And I'm like, no, we don't have time for it. We don't have time.
There's a great clip where he did a book tour in 2018 for his fictional autobiography.
I love that. Yeah. I want one of those.
That's fantastic.
Well, I mean, it's funny because, I mean, Norma's such a fan and a student of comedy. I think a little bit of that is a tipping of his hat to, they say Charlie Chaplin, who I'm a big fan of Charlie Chaplin, they say his autobiography is about like 85% fabricated.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Okay.
And so I think Norm kind of took a cue and was like,
right. I can do better. Yeah.
My life's not interesting. I'll just make up a lot of shit.
You're like, here, hold my beer.
But at this book reading thing, he read this very beautiful passage that was very sincere. But then the moderator also asked him about the moth joke. And he said how the moth joke came about was, it was a joke Colin Quinn had told him.
Okay.
Which was just a very quick, very like 101 jokes to tell to kids or whatever kind of joke. Very clean, very short joke. He was on Conan doing panel. And after his panel going into commercial, Conan said, all right, we're going to commercial and we'll be right back with more Norm MacDonald. Norm was unaware that he was staying for more time. So he didn't prepare anything else. And so during commercial break, he's like, hey, Conan, how long do you want me for the next segment? He's like, and he's thinking, he's like, I got this in his mind. He's like, I got this moth joke, but it's only like 27 seconds long. So if it's 27 seconds, we're great. And Conan's like, I don't know, 7 or 10 minutes. And he's like, 7 or 10 minutes. So that's why he elongated it to make
so
it
much.
an anti-joke because it's a dumb premise and it's a dumb punchline.
100%.
But the idea,
I think he said that too.
Because when you get to the end, you're almost like, oh, fucking course. Like, okay.
Because it's the longevity again, it's that Andy Kaufman kind of, and I'm not always for anti-comedy because I think like any form of comedy, you have to be very good at it and trained and skilled to pull it off. It's like people when they're like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if I danced badly on stage? And it's like, no, you know what would be funny and shock the shit out of me in the audience is if you came out and you did this really well-pointed choreographed dance for like 3 minutes.
Right.
Like, that would be hilarious because it would be unexpected. And so like that joke, Norm is the master of pauses and ellipses and weird inflections. So yeah, the moth joke is brilliant. if anybody hasn't, just go on YouTube and spend like an hour just watching clips of him.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he was one of your kind of comedy icons, or was there anybody else who inspired you into getting into comedy also?
Phil Hartman from SNL was a big inspiration because, weirdly, I have the same kind of pedigree as a lot of those guys did. Like, they grew up watching the same stuff that my dad showed me because my dad was a similar age to them. But so, like, I'm a man out of time generationally in a couple areas. Like, my favorite music group of all time is The Monkees.
Okay.
And I love the television show The Monkees.
I never guessed The Monkees. That's fantastic, though. I love it. I was actually going to ask you if you were in your movie because I was creeping through your Instagram for the movie, and I thought I saw you in a couple of pictures with the beard and everything. So I guess you are in it.
To give you a little background, and I know I said before I don't have ego, but the reason, the big impetus for this movie to make a feature film, as it is our first, is Nick Hyatt and I went to high school together and we bonded over film, indie film in particular. Our love of like Robert Rodriguez, which he loved the book Rebel Without a Crew, that basically is a manual to how to make a low budget movie. Cause he made, I think, El Mariachi for like $7,000, but that's then he crazy. Details it's bananas, but especially what's in that movie. He details how to use and ask for favors, use things that are around you, develop a story that has emotional resonance and personal resonance, and use the things that you have for production value to help tell your story. Don't write a story necessarily around all these things. Come at it with a personal angle. And Kevin Smith, who I loved and was introduced by my brother, he came home for a summer break from college and he had 2 VHS tapes. He had Chasing Amy and Dogma. And he was like, I think you're going to love Dogma. I think in a couple years you might like Chasing Amy. And I watched them both. And weirdly, yeah, I of course love Dogma. But I weirdly was like, oh, Chasing Amy is kind of this beautiful movie. Now, I understand the problematic nature, especially after Gigli, of having Ben Affleck turn a gay girl straight. That's not necessarily what the story of Chasing Amy is about, but I could see seeing that and then feeling that way. But so Nick Hyens and I were making short films. We're doing sketch comedy. We did a cable access sketch comedy show right out of high school that we did. And we've just continued to do things together in that world. And we were talking one day and we're like, all right, we're both 35 years old, which is technically middle age. And I mean, it is.
Still have 5 years, right? Still 5 years.
I mean, but like, yeah. Is the back 10 of that any good living? Like from 70 to 80, I feel like that's avoiding dying.
Yeah.
It's just like every morning waking up, like, Grim Reaper? No.
Get away.
And just
I'm
saying,
still here.
Yeah, and just saying things like, my shoulders are cold. Those weird things like that. So we were both saying, like, well, if 15 years ago when we were 20, 15 years from 20 to 35 seems like an eternity when you're 20.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
15 years from 35 to 50. Weirdly, in our perspective, seems like it's right around the corner.
Sure.
So we were like, okay, 15 years from now, if we looked back and we just kept on doing what we're doing, would we have any regrets? And we're like, no, neither one of us fall to the societal pressures of like, you should have this, 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 and this
right.
checklist mm-hmm. of a certain age. But I was like, you know what I would regret is if we never attempted to make a feature length movie and put our money where our mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
We make plenty of excuses of like, we don't have the budget. We don't have this, 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 whatever. It's like, we have the equipment. We have me. And so like, if we needed a dedicated actor, we write it and we put it together in a way where we film a bulk of the most scenes that have the biggest amount of cast in like mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days, almost do it like a 48-hour film festival. And then we have all this other stuff that maybe only requires me and you or to Nick, who's the DP as well,
mm-hmm.
me, you, and one other actor, me, you, and one location, you know. And so then all we have to be responsible for is we need one lead actor that is definitely going to show up and know everything, and it's going to be easier to make. We're doing that out of necessity for this movie, and as it turned out when we started developing the story, the movie became about kind of being 35 and looking back. The byline is what happens when the teen slasher movie grows up. So it's longer
mm-hmm.
these 20 somethings or teenagers who right. have zero inhibitions and fears and worries. They're just being like, oh, I hope I get laid. Like, that's,
basically. Like that's
right. And then when the killer right. pops up, it's like, no, don't kill me before I get laid. Like, that's the fear of those movies. And so I was like, how interesting would it be if the Breakfast Club, if like a group, an eclectic group of friends who then became estranged. Mm-hmm. So the Breakfast Club turns into the Big Chill and goes mm-hmm. camping in a Friday the 13th movie. And I was like, okay, we can maybe use if I'm the lead, maybe we can use my story, which was I played sports my whole life and then got hurt junior year. And I had to get 2 knee surgeries and was in a wheelchair for 6 months.
Oh my gosh.
And the doctor said, if you don't ever want to have your leg go paralyzed, you cannot do contact sports. You cannot run.
Ugh,
and so I was like, bummer. Okay. Yeah. But I was like, okay, what if this lead character, instead of me who got hurt junior year and still had some high school left
mm-hmm.
where I was doing a chorus class and I was always interested in theater and film and stuff, as we've talked about. But I never had time for it. And so like I would film sketches with my friends and whatnot, but I couldn't ever like audition for plays because it would overlap with a sport.
Mm-hmm.
After I got hurt, I auditioned for the next play I could, got it, and then was in everything my senior year and then went to college for theater. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, okay, what if Bizarro Ricky had this group of like the the Breakfast Club, and because we talked about that our senior year, one thing we really liked was we weren't weirdly like classist, and like we didn't mm-hmm. bully the younger classmen. We were, and like band kids hung out with the jocks, hung out mm-hmm. with yeah. the we were not separatist, which I mm-hmm. I don't feel like is always
not super exist. Common.
No. Yeah. And so we marveled at that, and we're like, okay, so what if it is this bizarro version me who was friends with the nerd and who turns out to be kind of a Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg kind of guy later on uh-huh. in life. his girlfriend was basically like Claire, Molly Ringwald, except, mm-hmm. and she was a cheerleader, except that she gets married, divorced, and has two kids and is kind of a cheerleader in her own life and to her kids. But, and then maybe there's the theater friends who's the beard to the closeted gay guy in high school, and they were inseparable. They were those mm-hmm. friends that always were together, and she was yeah. the stagehand and blah, blah, blah. What if they all were weirdly friends and very close, and my character was King Shit of Turd Mountain in high school?
Wow. That's very descriptive.
I like it. I mean,
but you know those people, right?
Yeah.
Like, uh-huh, who are sitting in the bar right now and is like, uh-huh. I ran the touchdown to win the game against the Eagles in 1993. And you're like, were you in the NFL? He's like, no, high school. Like, oh, the Eagles of whatever butthole county you came from. Okay.
Right. That one. That one.
Yeah. Like, wow. That you're still thinking
really
about that.
People. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we're like, okay, so what if I didn't get hurt and I had this group of friends, and I probably would have gone to college for a wrestling scholarship, which I think is kind of humorous in itself. Like, mm-hmm. what do you do with a wrestling scholarship? Like, well, today from 8 to 12, I have to roll around with some dudes.
That sounds great.
Well, our proclivities, I think, are different. But so I was like, okay, so he goes to college and he gets hurt. What if I got hurt there? And I didn't have mm-hmm. the safety net of the friends that I had in high school to lift me up and support me and to be like, yeah, I do theater. I'm in college and I'm still continuing that testosterone of sports, and I no longer have my friends. What if mm-hmm. then this character becomes a depressive alcoholic and dependent mm-hmm. on pain medication? And then one day he wakes up and he's 35 and he's never got traction in his life. Mm. He's kind of aware that the best years of his life are behind him. Mm-hmm. He's overweight. When people do realize he is that all-star from back then, they're kind of judgmental, like, and just like, oh no, this is what you turned
look at
you into.
Now.
I know. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And like, so the movie picks up with that, with me as the lead character, who 3 days in a row, you're kind of seeing like the worst 3 days of this existence, and him mm-hmm. realizing I have nothing to live for. And he's like, I'm going to kill myself. And I'm going to write a kind of a suicide email to that Breakfast Club group of friends that I haven't talked to in a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to say like, look, it's my fault as much as yours that we haven't stayed in touch. I've just realized my best days are behind me, and I think that's sad. And I hope you all are doing well, but I'm going to check out. And he's like, I'm going to do it at the campgrounds where we last hung out all together senior year after graduation.
Oh my gosh.
Bye. And then
Heavy. Yeah.
He goes, well, and that's the thing is like what I wanted with this slasher film, there will be inherent like humor in the dark comedy of honesty and awkward interactions. Kind of sure. like the people seeing the lead character and being like, ooh. This is a lot.
What happened?
Yeah.
What happened to you?
Did you get stung by like a lot of bees? Or
and then just never get better?
Yeah. Constant allergic reaction. So I think there's humor in that because I've been asked like, oh, is it a comedy? And it's like, well, you want to make very, very sure that when you're dealing with depression and suicide, or even the thoughts of suicide.
A little bit of comic relief is necessary. Yeah.
It's necessary, but you also don't want to make sure that you're mocking it. Because sure, I know me, suicide, you know, some people are like, it's a coward's way out. And it's like, well, for me, it's a disease and the disease wins. Mm-hmm. Mental health, it's hard just to make sure that we're not making a mockery of it. And 100%. I was like, but what if the Friday the 13th movies that always just have a disposable group of dum-dums, that there was like a connection to some of these characters before we started picking them off. Wouldn't that be a lot better than just like faceless people with boobs? I mean,
and white t-shirts and it's raining outside.
100%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, they're because, and so then the movie is where it gets into the more horrific parts is then when he goes to the campsite, which also we're doing a thing where the Friday the 13th movies are really fun in the last 15 to 20 minutes. And that's kind of what you remember. Cause the rest of the movie is actually pretty dull. Mm-hmm. The action and the kills happen then.
Sure.
We're doing that in the middle of the movie. And so when he goes to kill himself, his friends show up to stop him, like in the nick of time to kind of do an intervention. And unbeknownst to them, there is a masked suicidal maniac escaped killer
from a mental hospital
right, in the woods who's watching all of them, waiting to pick them off one by one, thus making the lead character have to confront, do I want to
die? Right. Yeah.
And so he
has
to make
a fun spin.
He has to make an active decision. What am I going to do to really decide, is my life worth living?
Wow.
Well, that sucks for his friends who weren't going to help and they're getting picked off now.
All your friends are dead.
How much time does he have to determine all of this? Like, what's the timeline? Is it days? Is it hours?
I will tell you that the onslaught of slaughtery occurs in a day. And
he's a serial killer.
Sure is.
Uh-huh. Well, he's efficient.
What I was saying, and there's knives, there's machetes, there's chainsaws.
Of course.
So
you need options, yeah.
Well, because there's a
line. Bag.
I brought my killing equipment. Well, so there's a line actually in it by Larry, who's who was the closeted gay in high school, who's now out and happy and had moved away from Kentucky to a bigger city where he can actually be himself and be happy. He talks about, he's like, when he gets back there at the campsite where they used to hang out, he's like, man, I was so naive as a kid. Like, this is the perfect setup for a horror movie.
Like, and
we were drunk and high, like we could have been taken out like that. And he's like, but you know, you don't ever see middle-aged people in horror movies and camping get killed by knives, machetes, or chainsaws. If you see middle-aged people die in movies, they die of diabetes, heart attacks, cancer, rare blood disease. And so, that's just a way to get across the mentality of just like what your brain is thinking about when you're of a certain age, and you just never see that in a movie. And I thought, it's like, if someone approached me like, you want to make a Friday the 13th movie? I'd be like, sure. But this is the kind of Friday the 13th movie I would want to make.
Sure.
People who have kids back home and, you know, are bitching about like taxes, which I mean, that's not what happens in this movie necessarily,
right.
But yeah. So you're saying that he's efficient and he kills everybody in a day. It's because, as I said, I didn't want the last 15 to 20 minutes to be the action gore that you kind of remember and are like
just
really
like waiting
liking.
For it to happen. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just like, how much bad dialogue do I have to go through? and this
how
isn't
long
even
is
born.
This movie? My gosh.
It's only 87 minutes and I feel like it's been 3 hours. But so what we do is we're putting that in the middle of the movie. And since the movie's already called All Your Friends Are Dead, we believe you already know what you're going to get.
Sure.
So we do that in the middle, because then the third act is not necessarily a twist, but it goes in a direction that after you see it, you're like, oh, yes, okay, this makes sense. But when you're watching the movie, you would pause it and be like, wait, everyone's dying. All the friends are dead now. And the movie must be close to being done. And you press pause and you look at the runtime and you're like, I'm
wait
only
a
minute 45. I still have 40 more minutes of this movie. What the fuck is going to happen?
I have done that. I have done that in movies where I'm like, okay, we've got 15 minutes. What the hell is going to
happen
now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so again, like already having the spoilerific name and wanting to tantalize a horror audience that is very savvy and smart to knowing kind of what's coming up. Sure. Having that in the middle and then having this third act that will be equally, if not more, fulfilling for the horror slasher audience, I wanted to change the trajectory of the formulaic slasher. And I think we're going to do that. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun for the audience.
That's cool.
I'm excited.
Yeah. You guys are still filming it though, right?
We are actually.
He had to get the beard off his face.
I have a month and a half or whatever.
Get the Sasquatch look gone.
Gotcha. I wish I could see your arms. I can't see your arms.
But yeah, we're still filming. We actually have to film tomorrow night, and one of the big final death scenes is Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And then we have just a couple small pickups here and there. And then we also have offered two more perks, because I don't like Kickstarters that have like 15,000 perks to mm-hmm. choose from. So originally we just only had a few, which one is the Blu-ray, which I think is the best. We were like, okay, let's put a couple more that are maybe interesting to people before the campaign ends, which was 4 associate producer credits, which gets you on IMDb, which some people just like being like, hey, I produced a movie that's on IMDb, like in my yeah, name. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's just kind of fun and an interesting badge. And the other two, well, it's one perk, but we offered two of them, were get killed mid-credit sequence. Uh-huh. And as soon as I posted it, immediately both of them were bought by a husband and wife couple who do a podcast about serial killers. Uh-huh. And like, they were super excited, and they're like, well, can we wear our podcast t-shirts and kind of like promote in the scene or whatever? Do you have a scene in mind? And I was like, we didn't, but now we do. You're going to be, if you're cool with this, you're going to be doing your podcast about the serial killer from our movie.
Oh, how cool.
This is spoiled. I mean, anybody watching this, you're getting this just spoiled. And yeah, you're going to be doing a podcast. You're going to be playing yourselves, and the serial killer pops up and takes you out.
And
I won't tell you how the kills are going to happen, but yeah.
Okay, sure, that's sure. Fine.
Don't want to ruin everything.
Yeah.
We like the spoilers.
Uh-huh. That's cool,
We feel privileged.
Yeah. I mean, if you ever need people in the background, like drinking wine and stuff like that, we're on board. Oh, anytime. And people hanging out in the back and like eating and drinking wine.
Like a cheese and cracker.
Charcuterie board.
Charcuterie board. Yeah.
100%.
Well, like a killer comes in the front, and then you guys have to, instead of the choice of wanting to live or die, you're like, do I want more cheese?
The answer is always yes.
Is it worth it? Can I be quiet enough?
And you crunch a chip and it's dead silence.
And then we'll just heavily judge the killer as he walks by. Like, why is he carrying it like that? Does he have a utility belt? That's a chainsaw there. Okay.
Stephanie's like, just grab the whole plate of cheese.
Just take it and go.
Yeah.
Let's just sneak out of here.
Yeah. Shit's going to get bad. We don't have to be here and see this.
And we're not going to waste this cheese.
Right.
So.
We did have a scene we filmed in a local brewery that was very kind to let us shoot. And we put out a thing for extras. And what was funny is some people message and were like, so we get to drink while we're there? And I'm like, no, unfortunately not. Like, it'll be non-alcoholic beer just to look like you have something. And sure. you don't get to talk. When we say action, you have to look like you're talking and having a good time. But for sound purposes, we're going to put that in later.
Sure.
It's super not glamorous.
No alcohol, and you got to pretend talk.
Yeah, but is there still cheese?
You know what? As long as it's not crackers, right? Not crackers.
The cheese was real. And it was 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. So.
I love cheese on Saturday and Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. I'm fine
and
with that.
Saturday and Tuesday and Wednesday. You know what?
Why limit ourselves?
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days.
Okay. Do you want to play a stupid little game with us?
100%. Yes.
Okay. Great.
So we do would you rather questions way too often. So
just in general. Like sometimes it'll just pop up and
just for a scenario.
You're right.
Would you rather I not ask you this question or ask you this?
No, both options are, would you rather me ask a question or ask a question? Because I'm going to ask.
Right. You don't have an option.
So they are horror movie related, though. Okay. Ready, Courtney?
I'm ready.
Okay. Would you rather receive the Annabelle doll from The Conjuring as a gift or receive the Chucky doll from Child's Play?
Ooh. Oh, man.
And I haven't heard these questions either.
I know.
Oh, are you guys also going to answer them?
Sure.
Okay, cool. I'll give mine first. It's a Sophie's choice because is my answer like filtered through what film series I like more? Because if that's true, the Child's Play, man, if people haven't watched his last two installments, not the remake with Mark Hamill, which is its own thing and fine, whatever, but like the Brad Dourif.
I feel like you're judging it right now.
It's so much its own thing because it's not Charles Lee Ray, the killer who put his soul into the body.
To the doll.
It's, it's a robotic doll that just does bad. And it's like a Teddy Ruxpin, just an evil. And so it's its own thing. And it just happens to be called Child's Play and kind of move through some of the similar beats.
Okay. But
yeah, so like, it's fine. It's a fine movie.
Not the same, but okay.
You'll know when I'm shitting on a movie.
No filter.
Okay, Annabelle versus Chucky.
I digress.
Chucky is constantly trying. This is going to sound way dirtier than I mean it. He's constantly trying to put himself inside me to take over my body.
I'm going to take it in a dirt way, but okay.
And I don't know that I want that. But
I don't think anybody does, but okay.
I'm also saying I don't know if I want that. Like, I don't know.
There's a fine line.
Sure. Yeah. 50-50 shot, really.
You know, 50-50. Love is blind. Who knows until...
No judgment. No, not at all.
Kinsey scale, it depends where you fall. I would say I would rather take home the Annabelle. If we're saying from the movies... because the real Annabelle is just a Raggedy Ann doll that's like kind of not creepy at all. But yeah, I think I take the Annabelle doll. I think I take Annabelle.
Oh, there's a question. I forgot. Yeah. I forgot we asked a question.
I will chase rabbits all day.
We'll just corral you back, little kitten. Like, come on.
Come back here. Like squirrel. Something shiny.
Well, I feel like my first instinct is Chucky because when we watched the first Child's Play, I'm like, can't someone just like grab him or kick him or something? Like, it's just like, he's just like a little doll. Just grab him. Like, but then also after watching the first Conjuring, Annabelle just ends up in like a glass box and doesn't seem like she can do anything outside of the box.
Okay. That's it. Right.
So it might be like, that might be the better choice. Yeah. Like, oh, she can fuck up people's day and possess all this shit, but oh God, she's got glass around her. Like, how? How?
Well, it's the same thing with The Conjuring too. Like, he had all of these like artifacts from all of these
trophies.
Things.
Let's call them trophies because they're trophies.
They're trophies. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Trophy room.
100%. Yeah.
But I mean, so all of this was just in a regular house.
Yeah,
didn't have
it's
any
fine
kind of,
in
like,
there on the shelf.
Right.
But, yeah. I don't know. Weird.
You know, because after you vanquish a demon or a horror, you want to have it as close to you as possible.
Of course. In the room next to where your child sleeps, of course. Definitely. Yes. Right?
Stupid
when we
words.
Did The Conjuring, we're like, why is their daughter's room so close to this room full of all these trophies that are haunted?
Why is she allowed to walk in there?
I don't know. So I guess we're all thinking Annabelle, right?
Yes.
Okay. Annabelle,
100%.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Would you rather get a visit from Freddy Krueger every time you go to sleep or get kidnapped by Jigsaw from Saw?
Oh, fuck no. No.
That's a good one. So yeah. Elm Street is my ride or die.
Okay.
That's my series. That's my jam. I think it's the most, this is going to sound weird, but I have an explanation. It's the most realistic.
Okay.
You can
watch dreams. You can do anything. Like, there's limitless in dreams. You can't.
Friday the
13th. Crazy.
Like, there could always be the worry of like, well, who's next door and who's the creep in the mask and who's that? Blah blah blah. Everyone, if you went and saw A Nightmare on Elm Street, everyone had to do what the characters in that movie did that night after seeing the movie, and you could have had a Freddy dream, which dreams are as real to you as when you're having them.
Absolutely.
As anything else. So you could have the exact same experience as the characters in those movies. So that's why I think it's the most terrifying series. And I love the there are characters. I think there's, I was talking about disposable characters before. There's deeper characters in that series that extend to multiple movies, and there's stories that extend to multiple movies. Like Friday the 13th only has like the Tommy Jarvis trilogy, which is kind of bonkers. Gosh, Saw. Oh,
this, I don't, because Saw is awful and gruesome, and I hate everything about it, but you just got to follow the rules, you know? Like, yeah, but I don't know. Like,
cut open your chest to pull out a key, or like kill or your other dog. Person. Yeah.
I'm not interested. I don't like excessive gore. That's kind of one of my things in scary movies. I don't want to see
it. And it's torture. It's straight up torture.
Yeah. I'm not interested in that. Ugh. I'm good.
That's I'm hard. Okay with it. So, because then I thought of when you were talking about Saw, it's, the funniest thing about Saw is Dr. Neil Gordon or Dr. Gordon cuts Saul's off his foot, and has finally pointed out that if he'd have reached with the saw, the hacksaw, it would have been long enough to grab the phone.
Oh,
it's laying there. Like he's reaching and he's like just a little too far away.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But that saw is like this long.
Sure.
He could have just been like
2 feet of reach. Yep.
Yeah. And that I can't watch the movie the same now after seeing that.
Well, now you ruined it for us too. Thank you.
It was ruined before. I hated it. I hated that movie. We only watched the first one.
Oh, no. Saw 2.
Why? I don't want to cave to your peer pressure.
Saw 2 makes Saw 1 better. I'm not saying you're going to love it. And you don't have to go past that, because then it is just you're rooting for the most fucked up imagery that you can see in the, like,
yeah,
pools of blood. Mm-hmm. But two makes one better.
Why?
Look at her. It would be spoiling.
Prove yourself.
I can't control my face. I'm just
so the story that happens in two explains some things and elevates
that
some
are missing
things.
In one.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the same thing, or it would be spoiler. It would be spoilery for me to then. I would say I'd rather have Freddy dreams.
Oh, that was a question. Okay.
Because I had Freddy dreams. Like I had bunk beds and I had a ceiling fan, and like I had bunk beds because I thought it'd be cool to have two beds in the room. Like my one brother was too old. He didn't live with us anymore. My other brother was like 5 years older than me, and we didn't share a room. I just had bunk beds in my bedroom, and I would, because I'd be like, let's go on a vacation and sleep on that top bunk tonight. And I would, you're kind of close to the ceiling, and I would see the ceiling fan, and I would have Freddy nightmares. And I had a nightmare once where I was in my bedroom and the ceiling fan turned, the blades of the ceiling fan turned into his claws.
Nope.
And came off and cut me.
Hard.
Because I was so close. But I'd rather have those dreams than be put in
an actual
because I could have powers in those dreams if I access them like Dream Warriors.
Mm-hmm. Do whatever you want.
Exactly. Yeah.
I agree. I think that's the better way to go.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not interested in Saw. I'm good. Thank you.
Saw, scene, bye.
Done.
See ya. Yeah.
Did you have like nightmares as a kid after watching all these scary movies? Or 100%. Like not until do you not?
Yeah.
Do you still have them?
Occasionally from time to time, they're definitely not as vivid, which makes me sad because, now that I'm like writing this stuff, Wes Craven used to be able to dream journal, and he used to be able to have very vivid dreams. And you know how like sometimes we have multiple dreams in a night and you'll wake up and you'll be like, I have vague remembrance of this dream, but very clear on this one, which must have been the last one. He used to be able to, or so he says, or said, cause he can't anymore. He's dead.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, R.I.P. Got to get my grammar correct. He used to be able to dream and then wake up at the end of the dream while in his like sleep, write it down or record it, and then go back to bed, sleep, dream a little bit more, get into REM sleep, wake up, journal it, go back to sleep.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Who knew that was a thing?
I don't have that kind of time.
Okay. I just wake up and be like, did I fart? Like, what is...
That's about the extent of it, right?
Yeah. You just farted yourself awake is what happened.
Yeah, basically.
Of course.
Okay, next one.
Okay.
Would you rather babysit Damien from The Omen or babysit Regan from The Exorcist?
Hmm.
Your mother sews socks in hell. That's the television dub. Your mother sews socks in hell.
So bad. It's so bad.
It's so good. It's like Die Hard. Yippee-ki-yay, melon farmer. Damien or... And you're just babysitting.
Yeah.
But
also, I like to imagine that, like, Reagan's at the point of where she's, like, confined to the bed. Like, she's not, like... climbing down the stairs backwards. Like, right. I like to think that that's the situation.
You have
help. Then that's easier. Right. Then that's easier.
You have other babysitters with you because you have an old priest and a young priest.
100%.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And she's contained. Right. And I can just, like, sit in the living room on my phone, pretend that nothing's happening, and I'm good with that. But,
sure.
Like, Damien, none of his babysitters survived, like, at all. They, like, jumped out windows and shit.
Well, it was all for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all for you, Damien. I would go... Man, because Damien only really messed with you if you fucked with him, right? If you were in the way of his power.
Yeah, but if you were babysitting him, you're eventually going to have to say no, right?
Unless you draw your allegiance to the Dark One.
No rules.
Because, like,
you're not wrong.
His stepmom, his aunt, and Damien Omen 2, that's a reveal at the end that she has given his allegiance to him the whole time. But then she ends up dying, though, too, in that fire, I think. Mm. So, booze. Oh, I don't know. There's just some things you can't go back from, a la crucifix in the nether regions and Exorcist.
100%. Yeah.
You see that and you're like.
When I saw it, I'm like, what the entire fuck now? Like, 100%. This is not okay.
If you're babysitting someone, you like open a door and like, that's happening. You just back away slowly.
You just close the door.
Close the door and you just get the fuck up out of there. You're like, I'm done.
Look, I want to respect you and your kink and what you're into, and I'm glad you're behind the door.
I love that.
Not involving anybody else.
You're like, oh, sorry to disturb you.
We'll have to talk about that later, yeah.
There's a lot to unpack. So
I guess you just have to make a decision. I'm going to say, I think you swayed me with Regan and she's tied up in the room.
That's the only way it's doable.
And she's
not contained.
Right. The only thing she does is because Father Karras makes the decision to take over he opens up his body and soul to take the demon before jumping out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the pain, like, I can't tell if the heart attack of the old priest, and I'm drawing a blank on his name. I don't think that's the devil. I think that's just he's old and all of this is getting to him.
Yeah.
I think Regan, because she really doesn't do anything.
Right.
Like, you're going to have to get a carpet cleaner for the piss.
100%.
But yeah.
100%.
Well, it's fine. I mean, she's tied up. You just keep the door closed. You go downstairs. You have your glass of wine and your cheese platter.
You hope it's over soon.
You have your 20 bucks to order some pizza. Your boyfriend comes over and he's like, what's that noise? Why
just
is it cold in here? Yeah.
Just don't worry about it. Just put the volume on the TV up a little higher. It's okay.
They got Netflix.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. I think Regan. I think you swayed me.
You and Regan too.
I'm gonna. Yeah, no. Yes. Yes. Mm.
Okay. Would you rather be alone in a room with Michael Myers, or have a dinner with Hannibal from Silence of the Lambs? I think the follow-up would be like, is Hannibal preparing the dinner? Because that I'm not interested in at all.
Is he having you for dinner or is he having you for dinner?
100%. Are you a guest or are you the entree?
Is he taking off the arm that he's going to be serving up?
Or are you Ray Liotta where his head's open and he's just searing his brain?
Yeah, I think the technicalities are important in this.
And I feel like you presented the question so you could... give us clarification on the technicalities.
I'll clarify.
Please. Okay.
I'm going to say that we're going to be dinner guests, and he is not cooking dinner. He's just there.
But you're unaware of what the dinner is. So it's
like some sort of steak or whatever, or something,
and you're not a vegetarian. Yeah.
Or it's served a nice Chianti and some fava beans. That's all you know.
I pick that 100% because he is bougie. That'd be some good dinner, even
regardless of what it is. It's gonna be nice. Yeah.
How do you know what you're eating half the time anyway if you're not preparing it? Or I mean, even if you're preparing it, we get stuff from the store, and like I'm
100%.
Not, This isn't like.
I assume it's chicken. I don't know. Yeah. I'm told it is.
It's not like tinfoil hat conspiracy, right. But yeah, like who knows what we're getting? That's okay. The tube of ground meat.
Yeah. Wow. Sure.
Why do you have to say it like
just
that?
Blindly.
It could be a package. It could be a package of ground meat.
And also, the gesture made it better too.
A tube. A tube.
Well, because like you, the only way to get it open because it has those metal rings on the tips.
We're gonna go into this now. Okay, go ahead.
Is to cut it, and then it's like, ew, I just got ground meat juice something. On my scissors. Yeah. And then like you have to like peel it
push
like.
It
like you're you taking a condom off of the person. Yeah. Or yeah.
Oh, man. That was fun.
So you won't be served that at Hannibal's, at least, you know, well, that we know
maybe,
of.
Maybe. Maybe not.
I don't even know
how to answer that one. I just plead the fifth.
Okay, I have one more. So we'll do the other one. Okay, would you rather spend the summer at Camp Crystal Lake or the winter at the Overlook Hotel?
Oh, at the Overlook Lodge. Mm-hmm. Man.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Really, and I know it was mixed, but Doc, I'm not a big fan of The Shining, of the Jack Nicholson, Shelley Duvall Shining.
It really takes forever to get through.
Yeah, and like I love the acting. I'm just not a big fan. So Overlook Lodge or Camp Crystal Lake?
I like camping. I go to the lake.
Well, I like
because
not
camping.
Sweating and waking up gross, so I would love the comfortability of the hotel. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Mm-hmm. I like glamping or being like near it to where I can leave and then go take a nice shower.
Go to like a cabin or something.
You can
after,
see it behind the glass.
And, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
Or just like go to a lodge and hang up a picture of a lake. And then like that's cool too.
I'm also cool with like going to a hotel, then during the day maybe go on like a little trail, buy it.
Go to the
and
vineyard.
Then go back to my 100%. Then go back to my hotel, maybe swim in the pool or something, and then just not submerge myself 100% into it.
And then like, telling people you went hiking that day.
100%.
Yeah.
I'll take a bunch of pictures to prove I did it. Yeah. And everyone will believe me.
Right.
You'll strap a phone to like a dog and have it run, be like, "This was my morning run today."
Oh my God, that's a great idea. It's a great idea.
But that all being said, dissecting the movies, once you're inside the Overlook Lodge, you are susceptible to possession and the evil.
And you're pretty much trapped. Yeah.
Right. Camp Crystal Lake, you didn't give this caveat, but I'm going to say I'm a camper.
Okay.
And if you remember, most of those movies...
Counselors.
It's the counselors, and it's before the camp opens. Jason lives.
I like the loophole. I know.
Jason Lives is the only movie where there's fucking kids at the camp, and not a one of them die, which I'm like, why? Why have kids and not kill a few? There's a great line where the kids are under the bed while Jason's outside, and the one kid looks at the other and he goes, "So what did you want to be when you grew up?" But because Jason Lives is zombie Jason. It's the introduction of zombie Jason. It's the third in the Tommy Jarvis trilogy, played by a third different actor. Mm. And it's Thomas McLaughlin made basically a parody of what the Friday the 13th movies have become. It's the sixth in the series. And so that's why it is held in such high regard. Alice Cooper did the song, Man Behind the Mask. Like, it's got all the 80s cheese going for it. Mm-hmm. But it's good because it's kind of making fun of how dumb the rest of the series kind of, and repetitive the series was. Like, that's why, like, part four, they introduced Tommy Jarvis. When you put Corey Feldman as that little kid, and you're not at the camp, they're at these houses that are by the camp, the stakes are that much higher because you're like, I don't want to see a little kid die. Mm-hmm. But in part six, when there's a bunch of them, it's like, you got enough. Get rid of a few of them.
Pick a couple of them off.
Yeah. Otherwise, why? Why are we having them in this movie? So yes, my answer is Camp Crystal Lake because the likelihood, like if I'm going there as a camper, I'm probably going to live.
I like the loophole. Camp Crystal Lake with the loophole of being a camper, not a counselor. I like it.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. That's where it's at.
That's where it's at.
That's it.
We did it. Let's go home. Done. Shut it
Look
down.
At that. Look at that.
Thank you for playing our stupid little game with us.
That was amazing.
I want to talk about your short horror film Racist that we watched on YouTube.
That I've not seen. I've not seen your reaction to yet.
I don't think our watch along is out yet. I think it's the next one to come out. Okay. But yeah.
Feel free to ask any questions. There are no dumb questions. And feel free to give me your unfiltered opinion. I can take it. I'm a big boy.
Can you tell everybody what it's about first, and then we'll kind of dissect it a little bit?
It is about, I am a middle-aged 35-year-old white man in Northern Kentucky. So doing something about racism probably isn't my area of expertise, or I shouldn't be necessarily the person with the conch who is talking about that. But what I did want to do is, I'm a big fan of David Cronenberg in body horror. And I was like, okay, what if this guy in a span of one day just has all these moments of internal racism, and say his internal racism is like an internal thermometer that it just then boils over after all these little instances of it.
And boy, does it. Yeah.
And what if it physically manifested itself to assist? And that's basically the short, and it's examples of that through paranoia of people of different races in larger numbers than yours. Their conversation at the beginning, which if you have to be a really big horror fan and you'd have to really listen closely to the conversation, the lead character is describing little kids with hammers wearing parkas beating the shit out of a teacher. He's describing the scene from The Brood, which is a David Cronenberg movie where the little monster children who wear parkas take little hammers and kill a teacher in a classroom. And so he's talking about a movie he watched the night before. And so that was just my little tip of the hat of being like, thank you, David Cronenberg, for inspiring basically the genre of body horror.
Yeah.
And so then there's Call's credit card company, which anybody who has credit cards and or health or insurance, like when he calls the hospital, finances are very tricky. And like you get very anxious when you're calling anything about that, or like health insurance. You're like, I want to make sure things are covered. So your stress level is high. When someone comes on the phone and has an accent that seems to be of another race or country, and they say their name is something like Steve, I am like, I don't know. I just put up like, that's my internal racism of just like, I'm not like, I think this race or whatever is less than I am or whatever. My knee jerks a little bit. And I'm just like, oh, my trust is a little less because I'm worried about the insurance or whatever and this and this. And I want to make sure I completely understand everything you're saying. I really want to make sure you completely understand everything I'm saying. I think that is everyday racism that like, people experience, and it's okay. So that's what did you guys think?
I think in a good way.
7-minute long thing.
I think it was uncomfortable to watch in a good way, in the sense of like you can really feel the main character who's struggling with this racism, like leaving his house, walking to the park, bumping into someone who he's uncomfortable by, going back into his house and completely paranoid, just peeking out his window, out the peephole, like feeling like he's being watched. And it's like, you can feel his discomfort, which is uncomfortable while you're watching it. And then I think my favorite part was at the end when the guy like walks in the door to give him his wallet back. And he's like, cut my mouth.
It's so like, that's actors Aaron Harris, who gets to play a cop in All Your Friends Are Dead. I was like, this is a much better time for you. You're not getting sprayed with yogurt and cottage cheese.
Oh my God.
It was such a visual. We both were like,
you did real good on that. You did money, real good.
Money shot.
Oh my gosh. It was good though.
He took it like a trooper. Thank you. On the scale of the other shorts you've watched, like say something like Altitude. Narratively, did it make sense beginning, middle, and end? Insatiate, like, oh, I just watched a short movie. Like, I got a story, I got a little bit, you know, or Yeah, compared to other things you've watched, where do you kind of...
I'll be honest, Altitude, I still am confused on Altitude. Your movie, I understood, I like the creative name of it, I understood what the message was from beginning to end. And exactly. I think it was done clear, but not in an obvious way, yeah. If that makes sense. And like, you had to think about it
And it gave
bit.
You emotion. Like, you could yeah. feel... He had so much anxiety and everything like happening that it, you could
eating him and yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could kind of put yourself in his situation as far as like you could feel what he feels, mm-hmm. which is important for me because I want to feel that emotion of somebody.
And I think it's important too for doing such a short film. Like you have such limited time to get your point across and get, you know, from A to B, you know, mm-hmm. and doing it in 7 minutes and still be able to convey some type of feeling. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But a lot of that talking about like the collaborative effort is mm-hmm. Braden Firebrand, who did music, sound mixing and Foley sound effects and score for my first short film Call, also did it for Racist and is also going to be working on All Your Friends Are Dead. Hmm. What he did with the sound mix and the score and the music for Racist really, really helps sell that, like you said, that building anxiety and paranoia mm-hmm. of that lead mm-hmm. character, because it does, like the way he does the mix and with the bass, there's kind of like this underlying heartbeat that's always mm-hmm. in there yes. that you don't necessarily mm-hmm. pick up on until a little bit later. It's there throughout the whole mix, his heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to play with that too, of also with colors of like blue to red, which also police and police brutality and like with racism and stuff. And also just from cool to seeing red kind of
mm-hmm. emotionally. Falls.
Yeah. Emotion yeah. Emotionally. Yeah. 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 Is it like that internal temperature thermometer thing. The thing like talking about All Your Friends Are Dead, when people have asked, will there be humor? And we talked about that earlier. I think Racist or I should say Racist has purposeful moments of humor, mm-hmm. Which I mean, it might not like seem funny, but like the cyst growing or mm-hmm. like even more earlier, that song that comes on the main guy's headphones is mm-hmm. super on the nose. Like mm-hmm. lyrically, if you listen to it, we were not being subtle. We were not being clever. And that was an original song written for Racist by Braden. He wrote and recorded that. Oh, and he's cool. like, cool, yeah. he's like, we want some like white boy rock, some like yacht rock or some like early 2000s, like not Blink-182, but like worse than Blink-182 kind uh-huh. of sounding thing. And he's like, what about this? And I was like, oh, I love it. That's hilarious. There's zero subtlety. And like the lyrics are just stating out like, I hate that things are changing. I wish they could be the way, you know. But yeah, thank you guys for enjoying it and feeling. I'm glad that it reached its goal of building that paranoia as you're watching mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, it was great.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Everybody should check it out. It's spelt with a Y instead of an I.
So we had problems
like
with that.
Cyst, yeah.
Well, so I can't wait while doing the watch. So my brother was like, when we do the title card at the beginning and it's called Race and it says it there, which anybody watching it would kind of know what it is if they're wherever they're watching it at a film festival mm-hmm. or blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, he's like, I think you should take that out. He's like, I don't think you should tell people like what's going to be happening. And I was like, yeah, but I think people are going to see it and then be like, racist. Well, that's not spelled right. Right. And like, they're not going to like register like cyst, like, huh? And then when it gets to the end, and then it comes back like, again and you see mm-hmm. it again, you're like, oh, yeah.
I get it.
There
now.
It is.
Yeah, racist, cyst. Cyst.
And we'll definitely add to the, for the episode, we'll put in the notes in the yeah, this episode
absolutely.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. I can't wait to have more people see it because I think I can't technically have it unlisted until February. We have an amazing special effects and makeup crew who've worked mm-hmm. on Haunt, which if you haven't seen it, I think it's on Amazon Prime still. It was written by the guys who wrote A Quiet Place.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal. It is. You're going to feel like it feels like Saw, like it's torture porn, because the premise is what if these young kids go to this haunted house that's secluded and they have to sign a waiver and they have to give their cell phones and they're mm-hmm. like, oh, this is just to be like, oh, something could happen. Something mm-hmm. does happen.
Of course. Of course it does.
Yeah. Always.
Always.
But so our team worked on that. They worked on this gruesome cult horror movie called Candy Corn. They worked on a Hillbilly Elegy with Glenn Close and Amy Adams. They've just worked on a lot of great things, and we're really fortunate to have them doing the special effects and the makeup for our movie.
That's really cool.
What are the next couple of steps for your movie? Like how like when does it come out? What's the next steps for it?
So that plays part and parcel with the Kickstarter. So it still mm-hmm. has 11 days. We reached our minimum goal, which was $5,000. And all of mm-hmm. this money is going to post-production to get it done as quick as possible. And like expenses people don't think about, like talking about festivals before, festivals cost money. Sure. And they actually cost a lot, especially when it's a feature film. Luckily, short films are a little less pricey, but we want it to have the best sound mix. We want it to have the best score. We want it to look the best, color grade. And the more money we can raise, the quicker that can happen and the better that can happen. So our stretch goal in the next 11 days is, which whenever this airs, it might not be 11 days, but like go and check it out and see how many days are left. And mm-hmm. get a Blu-ray. The Blu-ray is the only way to guarantee that you'll see this movie by October 2022. Because the movie's going to be done and wrapped and mixed and blah, blah, blah. The way it's going to be able to be seen in its entirety by probably June or July of 2022.
Okay.
But then the next step is finding someone who's interested in buying it, doing the distribution, getting it seen by more people. And how is that going to be done? We'll be submitting it to festivals, so it just won't be out there publicly. Like we'll be trying to get it on a streaming platform, and that just takes time after it's done. And so the reason why I pushed the Blu-ray so hard is, regardless of all of that and how much time that takes behind the scenes, you will have the Blu-ray by October 2022. And that Blu-ray will have exclusive commentary that will only be on that Blu-ray, and it'll be numbered, and horror fans love their physical media. And the other thing is your name will be in the credits. So this thing that you help support indie horror, you get it and you watch with your friends. And even if you're like, this is trash, which I hope it's not, you're going to be like, ah, my name's in this trash.
Basically famous now.
yeah, exactly. And like, so we still have a couple of the associate producer credits perks available on Kickstarter. And that is basically what I just said. Your name is going to be listed, just not in a thank you. It's going to be executive producer, producer, associate producer, and then your name. And then when you go up, look, IMDb for our movie, you can show, yeah, and be like, look, I produce movies.
I'm so kind of a big deal.
That's the next step, is like, there's a long road ahead of us that isn't sexy, like to anybody online, but it's really the next step I'm looking forward to. And the last big push we have is just getting anyone who wants to support indie horror movies, because that's where you're going to get the new and original ideas. Horror fans love to complain that they're tired of reboots and remakes. So the best way to kind of avert that is give to movies that are definitely happening, because like our movie's already 85% completed. So this is happening. We're already funded. You're going to get the movie. Give what you can, or share it to friends that you think might be able to help out and contribute.
How do they go about doing that? Actually contributing.
The easiest way is just go. You'll have a link probably in your show notes that they can just click. If you don't do that, you can just go to Kickstarter.com and type in "all your friends are dead." Very important. It's your YOUR, not all you are friends are dead.
Good to know.
Yeah, and you'll see it pop up. And like I said, if you can't contribute, like that is 100% fine. Because I know everybody's financial situations ebbs and flows and, you know, are different. But share it like with your horror buddies and see if they can get a copy of the Blu-ray. And then you guys can have a watch party.
Yeah, absolutely. Or,
you know, get a copy of the Blu-ray. And if like different podcasts, as I mentioned before, who got the Get Killed mid-credits sequence. a way to promote your podcast, you'll get a social media shout out too that we do. Have the name and the credits be your podcast. And then that's free mark. I mean, not free marketing, but you got a movie.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
You know, whatever. Do what you want.
Just saying Tipsy Podcast if you want to be listed in the credits.
No, we got it. We got the subtlety. We got it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So is there an actual like social media page for All Your Friends Are Dead, or is it better for them to just follow you?
It's better just to follow me, because that's where I'm going to give the most updates. We'll probably be putting one. There's a YouTube page that has all the updates we've put together and some fun clips and a animatic storyboard that we have for one of the kills that we haven't shown the actual footage of yet. But yeah, at Ricky Glore on Twitter or at Glore Ricky on Instagram, you're going to see behind the scenes stuff. You're going to see cute pictures of my daughter. And so that's just the added bonus. So it's like horror, 2-year-old. Horror, 2-year-old. It's a weird roller coaster.
That was the levity we talked about before. That's exactly the same thing.
Exactly.
Full circle.
Decapitation. 2-year-old.
Well, I mean, some days she probably could decapitate somebody. So.
Yes.
She's two.
I always say that part of my stand-up is, if you don't know what it's like having a 2-year-old, it's like constantly playing a real life version of the game Clue. Where no one has died yet.
It may happen.
They're constantly,
maybe not today, but yeah, maybe tomorrow.
Because they're constantly running in and out of rooms carrying different household items. And yes, you gotta guess which room they're in and what they're carrying.
What weapon they got.
Yeah.
I love that analogy. I love it.
It's true.
Ricky, we thank you so much for being on our show. This was so much fun to talk to you.
Thank you. I will happily do it again.
Yay!
If you guys, if even if it's just like a movie where it's not necessarily a watch along, but like you guys just watch something and you're like, oh, let's just talk about this one thing. And so you guys can just be like, what?
Bit more insight that we don't know what's going on here.
What you definitely saying, have a whole different perspective than we do on these things.
Look, in altitude, what they're saying is...
What's really happening that you did not get?
Yeah, we're just like surface level with those movies.
Oh, yeah. It's just more reaction.
I had a great time. I had a great time with that because I, too, was like, oh, this looks really good.
Yeah.
And then they did things that seem like twists and turns, like in a longer movie where it then is explained, or there's like more pathos. And I'm like, but you don't have that luxury here. And you did the thing really well, like the bigger movies have, and it looks really well. But I was like, it has no resonance because I don't know what the fuck is going on.
I don't.
We were like, did we miss something?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, as they were getting higher, I mean, it's called altitude, so I would assume it has to have something to do with this.
You're getting higher?
Yeah.
Well, that, yes. Yeah. But like, actually getting high.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, like the oxygen levels are playing tricks on their brains.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like that's expressed in the short.
At all.
No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's not. Yeah.
Wait, and it also has subtitles, right?
Yeah. Which I was like, what? I didn't know I was signed up for this. I gotta read.
I loved that. That's, I mean, there's so many times where I'll, like growing up, like watching, you were talking about the Japanese Grudge and stuff. Like we watch Ringu. Mm-hmm. And like I brought a bunch of my friends over and like, we're watching a horror movie. Put it in. And they're like, oh, interesting. And then subtitles hit and they're like, fuck you. Like I didn't come here to read.
No.
Yeah.
I just came here to be entertained. I don't want to like,
pay attention.
Yeah. Oh, you want to be entertained? I got I Spit on Your Grave. No.
No.
No? Oh.
That's another hard pass, I think. Yeah.
You tried. I appreciate that.
I would never subject, unless you want to do a watch along of that, I would pay money to watch you two just be like.
Oh, I'd be so fucking angry. Oh, man.
It would do what it's supposed to do, though. I guarantee it.
Well, Ricky, thank you so much for chatting with us. We had so much fun with you.
Thank you so much for having me on.